You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. This week is the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival, and our first guest has several shows on the calendar. Welcome, Shelley Watson. Hi, Shelley.
Well, hello.
Shelley to Shelley. I love these kinds of shows.
Shelley to Shelley, yes.
It's a unique connection. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Shelley Watson, and I'm a multifaceted performer, director, producer, writer, set designer, costume maker, wig maker, all-around merrymaker, and I'm thrilled to be here all the way from New York City.
First time in Alaska?
It is my first time in Alaska.
Welcome.
And thank you. It's beautiful, and everybody has just been so hospitable. And I want to say right off, the food is excellent.
That's great.
People feed you well here.
I agree. And I think that Juno is a little bit under the radar for the culinary arts, but actually we've got quite a scene.
Yeah.
Well, you are, in addition to all of the things that you just mentioned, you're also an award-winning opera singer, mm-hmm. a Juilliard graduate, a music collaborator who specializes in improvisation. How would you describe your style if someone's never been to one of your shows?
I would say I'm like the Chaka Khan of musicians. I am every woman. It's all in me. As a performer and as an artist in general, there are so many different types of music and so many different types of artistry that I really enjoy. And so I've spent most of my life trying to incorporate as many styles, as many genres as I can into my performances. I'm also very interactive with the audience. And when it comes to classical music, you know, we're really taught, you know, don't clap in between numbers, don't say anything, don't make any noise. But for me, I really enjoy that. I really enjoy looking my audience in the eyes. I want to see them getting excited. You know, I want to see their reactions. And first and foremost, I want to feel like I'm connecting to every single person in the audience. So I always make sure during my performances that I do pick out individuals to sing to. So after the show, when they say, you know, I thought you were singing to me, it seemed like you were singing directly to me. And I'm like, I was. Yeah.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know that it is, you know, a long way from the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. And maybe people are tired of hearing about that. But when you speak of audience connection, I couldn't help but think of how hard it must have been to not have that, as it's so elemental to a live performer. So are you glad to be back in front of live crowds?
Well, you know, Shelley, something that's really interesting is how I became part of this festival is, you're right, most people weren't performing. And if they were performing online, they were sending in videos that were pre-recorded. But myself, I think it was in New York, March 19th was the shutdown mm-hmm. day. And by April 1st, I was doing live shows from my home, just me. I did two-hour different shows every week. I did 152 live shows during the pandemic, and I didn't repeat one show. And that's actually how I was able to come here to Juno, is that Zul Bailey, who's the artistic director out here for the festival, he had seen one of my shows. And interestingly enough, I can see people when they come in to – I was doing it on Facebook Live. So he didn't know that I saw that he entered. And I was like, Zul Bailey, a friend of mine from Juilliard. And he immediately like texted me, and he's like, I need to call you. I need you to call me right away, because I think – a lot of people thought I could actually see them in their homes. So they turned off their computer, and he said, how did you know that I was there? Yeah. And we just started talking, and he said, listen, you know, we've had a lot of people submitting videos, but nobody's done anything live. Could you do a live show for Juno? And I also did one for Sitka and for Mesa and for one for El Paso. And I prepared each of the programs just for them. And some of them were fundraisers. So while I was performing live, different people would text me and say, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson just made, you know, a big donation. And so I would say online. I'd be like, well, thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, for that wonderful donation. So it was really great to be able to communicate live with the people who were watching the show. And it was a blessing for me because a lot of performers didn't perform for over 2 years. So when live shows came back, they were a little nervous. You know, do I still have my chops? Can I still work mm-hmm. with an audience? And I went from live shows on Facebook to the first show that I did, which was in Spokane with Zool, with over 2,000 people. And it was perfect. I'm like, ah, finally, all of these people I can see. But to go back to your question, it was really difficult. And in New York, I'd say 40% of the theaters that I've been working in for the past 30 years have permanently shut down. So right now, just like here in Juneau with the Crystal Saloon, there are new venues that are popping up and looking to make a difference and sort of pick up where the other venues left off. It's slow going, but it is going. And that's what's important.
Definitely. Definitely. And I know that a lot's happening this weekend at the Crystal Saloon. A lot of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival is happening there, including, mm-hmm. I think, almost all of your shows. So
yeah.
One of the performances that we can see this week is an autobiographical musical journey mm-hmm. called All of Me. And that's this Friday. There's two shows. Can you tell us more about it?
Well, I have a very interesting background. I used to be a professional wrestler. Yeah, I was a professional wrestler. And in high school, I joined choir, which quite honestly, I saved my life. You know, a lot of people don't like to tell their backstory, but I'm the first person in my family to graduate high school, let alone go on to Juilliard. And I feel like it's very important to let people know that classical music isn't all about money, isn't all about your parents teaching you. I learned classical music from the cartoons, and I knew so much music from commercials and cartoons. And when I first started to sing opera, I felt like I was doing impersonations because as a comedian, I do a lot of different voices and accents. And my teachers said, no, you can actually do this. And so I went to a community college, and then I got a scholarship to Cal State Fullerton, and I was out there for 2 weeks, and they saw my transcripts, and they said, you have 22 credits of weight training and choir. You know, we can't let you go here. You need to go back to your community college, take some other classes. And I'm terrible at math, and my choir teacher said, there's schools that you can go to where you don't have to take math. And I said, well, that's where I'll go. And I had no idea what Juilliard was, you know, except for the Fame School.
Right.
And I thought, and I think if I had known because of my background, I probably wouldn't have auditioned. I probably would have felt, oh, well, they're not going to want me. You know, I'm from the wrong side of the tracks and I don't know anything about classical music. But they were very receptive, and I struggled the first few years academically, but I really forged my own way while I was there. And I think the work that I was doing and the types of programs that I was presenting, they were very excited about. And one of them that I started, which is still going on today, is the inter-arts. And what that is was combining music, dance, and drama together in multi-performances because that wasn't happening. And I said, well, when I saw Irene Cara and she's like, I want to learn how to fly. Hi! They were all performing together. So I formed this group, and that's how I met Zool, and that's how I met Matt Herskowitz. And I really forged my own way. And it wasn't without backlash. It wasn't without a lot of feedback saying, this isn't what we do here. But when you present something that is beneficial to so many artists and they saw such positive reactions, it was incredible. And now this whole new thing is blooming from it. And I feel really proud to have been a part of that because I think there are a lot of performers who are looking for gigs. They're looking for, I want to get into this orchestra. If I don't get into that orchestra, I'm not anything. And for me, I'm about a career. And especially when it comes to the arts, not everybody's going to be Zool, you know? Not everybody's going to have that incredible career. But then it's like, how do you make music, or how do you do theater? How do you continue dance but still make money? And for me, I will have done everything from doing voiceovers to singing cat chow commercials to doing wherever where I can use my instrument. And I think that in the show that I'm doing, it reflects all of that. So I have rock music, I have pop music, I do opera, and I actually had a little radio segment that played for over 12 years nationally called Hip Hopera, where I took you know, hardcore rap songs and changed them and arranged them operatically. So, you know, you might hear like, everybody in the club getting tipsy, one, you know, and people just go crazy for it. And it's just been really fun, because I have found ways personally to incorporate all the types of music that I love and be able to present it. And so far, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. And I think the important thing that you've shared there is that you found a path to success that allowed you to find, I guess, the path of least resistance, really. You didn't get hung up on some things that may have been obstacles, but instead people showed you ways through that didn't involve, you know, spending a lot of time and energy on something that wasn't your passion, mm-hmm. and may not have led you to be as successful as you are. So do you feel like you are also a mentor to other people who are like that, like you, and is that a part of the autobiography?
Absolutely. And when you're saying autobiography, I'm actually writing my autobiography memoirs right now, but I'm doing it a series of threes. So my first 20 years, my second 20 years, and I just turned 55, which the whole audience, the listeners will be shocked when they see how young and beautiful I look.
I agree. I will be.
But for me, there have been so many different spots in my life that although they might not be regarded as high art, they're still part of me. And I think it's very important, especially for, you know, people who have troubled childhoods, for people who are on the poverty level, to not think that you can't do something because you don't have that behind you. And, you know, there's that saying, find what you love and money will come to you. That hasn't always been the case. But for me, what's important to me as a person and a musician is my own personal integrity. Am I happy? Am I good with what I'm doing? Because especially in classical music, there's a lot of people who judge. And that's why a lot of people don't want to go to the opera. They say, oh, I don't have a tuxedo. Oh, I don't have a suit. But they don't realize that opera was for the people. Everybody was able to go to the opera. Poor people, standing room only was for the people who couldn't afford it. And a lot of the times, the really rich people, they wouldn't even pay attention to what was going on the stage. There was a whole area down in the front where they would just walk around so they could show off their new dresses. And so here they are paying for the opera, paying the most money, but in my mind, disrespecting it as if it was just something, an add-on for them. While the people who went to the standing room only, they're really enjoying it. They're listening to everything, especially when it comes to recitativo, which is the speaking part in opera. So a lot of people would say, oh, well, I don't need to hear that because it's not really singing. And so for me, I'm really about bringing opera, classical music to the people, which is why I really enjoy the outreach programs that Juno Jazz Festival is doing, because I think it's important, especially when you talk to children about opera, to not dumb it down, but to let them know what it's about. If you tell them the stories, if you say, you know, because they're all very fantastical. You know, you have the magic flute. Here's a guy who plays the pan flute and some evil witch. You know, we have everything from dragons to paupers to fishermen, which I talked about yesterday because I know Juno is all about fishing.
That's true.
And so I talked to them about that too, to say opera is really about relaying stories of the people that's set to music.
Well, All of Me is this Friday. Two shows, as I mentioned, at the Crystal Saloon. And I believe the first one is sold out. So they may have
first
to only
one is sold out.
Get tickets to the 10 p.m. show on Friday. But tonight is another one of your performances. It's called Life is a Cabaret. What will that entail?
Well, for me, cabaret is very personal storytelling within the songs. Like, it's not so much stories about my life, but stories about the songs and relating to it. So one of the songs that I do is Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine from Showboat. And a lot of it is talking about, you know, oh my gosh, my husband is so lazy. The house does not look good and he doesn't care because he just wants to drink. And so in between those, I'll make little comments about, like, girls, you know, when was the last time, you know, your husband actually fixed the dishwasher when he said he was going to? And so it's being able to relate in a sort of comic sense, but then also some of the more tender songs about heartbreak, about divorce, about longing for somebody. I feel like it's really important to present those songs on a personal level. Because so often, especially when we're looking at movies, there's so much affectation, you know, there's so much like over-dramatizing, you know, trying to bring tears to your eyes to move people, very much the way they score movies. So if you remove the movie score, it doesn't feel as sad. Like Saving Private Ryan is a perfect example. And they use Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, which each time it goes, it gets bigger and swells more, and you can feel it in your heart. So for me, cabaret, it's a variety of music, mostly musicals and then other songs that people have written. And there are quite a few songs that I'm pretty sure that people haven't heard in a musical or someplace else that are written specifically for the cabaret genre, which is really displaying personal stories through these songs and making them relatable. So it's much more casual, a little bit more laid back. And I will also, you know, talk to the audience, and sometimes I take requests. And
cool.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine is a favorite.
Oh, it's so good.
And finally, on Saturday, you'll be doing Laugh and Learn at the Mendenhall Public Library, which I believe falls under the category of outreach. It's for a much younger audience. What's the role of comedy in these performances, classical music, operas, even orchestral performances?
Well, I think I'm so glad that you asked that question, Shelley, because it's there. People just don't know. Like the composer Saint-Saëns did a whole thing called The Carnival of Animals. And he wrote all of these very humorous pieces that are depicting his musical interpretation of animals. There are so many operas that are all comedy. You know, you look at Così fan tutti. You know, it's all about, you know, people hiding and people pretending to be other people. And when I usually do these children concerts, I also include a lot of Disney music, because so much of that music is, to sound snobby, is what we call legitimate singing, you know, because now we're getting more into the pop music, you know, with like Moana and Mulan and on all of those. But children know about this without even knowing about it. And when you bring up Fantasia, and they have no idea how many of the unbelievable classical composers that they actually know just from this musical, you know, that is a movie. And so when I'm doing these family concerts, I like to be able to pick music that the children know and also present it in a non-pretentious manner. And the humor really helps, because I know when I first got to Juilliard, I felt very ashamed about not knowing these things. I felt, for lack of a better term, stupid, like, oh, I should know that. But then I became to realize I knew a lot more than I thought I did, just from influences. Like one of the arias that I do is O Mio Babbino Caro from Gianni Schicchi, the opera. And I'll usually say it's from this incredible opera, but many of you might recognize it from the Polly-O ricotta cheese commercial. There's a woman, you know, who's churning butter and you hear, oh, mio babbino caro, got nothing to do with cheese. That's a tragic aria, but she's whipping up cannolis, you know, or the Lakme duet. Da 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 da. British Airways commercial. So people know these things. And Zool, I remember one of the first concerts that we did, most of the arias that I did, I would make references, you know, to that. And, you know, some classical audience members will say, well, we don't like that because it's not true classical music. But it is true classical music. It's just how it's presented to us. So how would a woman who's, you know, blending that ricotta for those cannolis, how would she know what that is about? And especially, you know, people who, you know, Don Giovanni, you hear that everywhere. But they don't know what kind of guy Don Giovanni is. So they'll sing it sort of lighthearted. So for me, I feel like it makes it more relatable. It's more accessible. There's less pressure to feel like you have to know Italian, like you have to know German, you have to know Russian, because that's a lot of it. People say, I don't speak a different language. I don't know what they're saying. And even on that, at the Met, there are people who were opposed to having the translations on the back of the seats, and they'll show up and they'll just turn it off. Because they feel like, oh, well, if you have to look at that, then you're not a true opera fan. And to me, it's like, well, why would you deny them? How else are we going to get younger people into classical music, into seeing opera, if it's always presented, and this is my personal view, if it's always presented as this, you know, hoity-toity thing, it can be a big turnoff, especially for people who are lower income or don't have the education. And that's nobody's fault, because you don't know until you know. So I'm always so delighted, especially when I'm working with at youth, you know, at-risk youth, or in outreaches in lower poverty communities, how well they receive it when it's presented as, you deserve to be a part of this. Even though you can't afford to go here, what you can afford is your ears. What you can afford is going to the library and checking out a CD or listening to a DVD. And then that way you get, you know, that information that's given to you, how you understand it.
This has been a terrific conversation, Shelley Watson. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and I know the whole town is excited to have you here. And thank you for sharing all of your thoughts and this wonderful information about doing what you do. To recap, we've got tonight, Life is the Cabaret, 7 o'clock at the Crystal Saloon, two performances of All of Me on Friday at the Crystal Saloon, and Saturday for the kiddos and the kids at heart, Laugh and Learn at the Mendenhall Public Library, 10:30 a.m., Thanks so much again for being here today.
You are welcome, Shelley.
It's been a pleasure to get
Wonderful.
To know you, Shelley. Have a great time in town.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks.